I'm going to read for you from the Gospel of John a wonderful story about a wedding. This is the very beginning of Jesus' ministry for the community of John. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. And when the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." And his mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." And nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." And so they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now, draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone who brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink, but you have saved the best till now." This is the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. This is the word of God for us, the people of God. Thanks be to God. So the title of this sermon was to be Healthy Relationships, It Takes Two. And on an afterthought, I think maybe it takes three, and quite possibly maybe it takes many more. Sign and symbolism is vitally important in the Gospel of John. The very first words of today's reading are in fact a symbol. It begins by saying, "On the third day." Think about it. Does that ring a bell for any of you? For those of us who know the gospel, what happens on the third day? New life comes, right? Resurrection happens. Right away, we know this story is important. Right away, we hear that this story is a reversal. What was supposed to happen doesn't. The father of the bride had just run out of wine at the most important event for his family, the joining together of two families. He was headed for doom socially. This was going to be the end of it for him in his community. Weddings called for a week-long feast back in those days. And Jesus, on the third day, intervenes. A change from what was a human perspective happened through what God would shape it to be. Water is a symbol that is present in many marriages throughout scriptures. In fact, in the Old Testament, Isaac, his marriage to Rebekah began at a well. Jacob was also betrothed to Rachel at the well. Water is, in fact, the beginning of the creation story. Remember the separating of the waters? Water was the place of deliverance for the family of Noah and for the community of Moses. Water is that symbol of life that God offers us, especially through baptism, as we shared last week, where we are delivered into a community through the cleansing waters of God's grace. Now, the stone jars referenced at Cana were cleansing jars used by the community, ceremonial cleansing jars, not just for the jars that were used for cleansing so that they could wash their hands, but it was or wash their feet, but this was a cleansing that would happen through ritual, a community ritual that illuminated covenant to God and to one another. So hands and feet were washed so that the fellowship amongst them could be pure. Now this kind of promise, this kind of washing signified a promise to live in right relationship with one another in community. And it is there that Jesus turns the water into wine. What do you think about that? What do you think about the first miracle being performed at a wedding? Weddings are places of commitment where people promise to live rightly with each other forever. Could it be that Jesus was revealing his identity through this miracle, this first act in his entire ministry, that Jesus became the wine that would enable us to live in right relationship with God? Where would we be today without forgiveness, without the steadfast love of God, without understanding that God is redeeming our lives moment by moment? So this wine fills the water jars. This water is the water that is to cleanse, and it becomes the best wine served at the wedding. Jesus is that water turned into wine. Jesus reveals his purpose in this miracle. Jesus' extraordinary saving acts through his suffering, death, and resurrection are cleansing and restoring. They cleanse and restore sinful humanity into right relationship with God. If there is anything that our world needs more right now, it is commitment to relationship. Not only individual relationships, friendships, marriages, and partnerships, but corporately the whole community needs commitment. Let me share a few facts that I found while I was searching on the internet this week. The U.S. Census Bureau found that divorce rates amongst most age groups have been dropping since 1996. Now, that surely is good news. But let's look at that just a little bit further. 41% of first marriages end in divorce. 41%. 60% of second marriages end in divorce. And 73% of third marriages end in divorce. In America, there is one divorce every 13 seconds. That is 6,646 divorces a day, 46,523 divorces each week. Now think of the financial implications of that. Just think of the financial implications of what that means. The average length of a marriage that ends in divorce is 8 years. Now, the Barna Research Group, known for gaining statistics on religious groups, they measured divorce statistics by denominations, and they found that the highest divorce rate in a United States religious group was amongst the Baptists, and that rate was 29%. Well, wait a minute, that's not really funny. Listen to this. 29% of Baptists divorce. Only 21% of atheists or agnostics were divorced. They were the lowest group, the atheists and the agnostics. What does that tell us? Does that tell us that the atheists and the agnostics are more faithful? What does that tell us? I mean, shocking to me. 43% of children growing up in America today are being raised without their fathers. I was one of those for a while. 75% of children that are living with divorced parents live with their mother. 28% of children living with a divorced parent live in a household with an income that is below the poverty line. How can we let that happen? Half of all American children will witness the breakup of their parents' marriage. And of these children, close to half will also see the breakup of their parents' second marriage. Now, Let's talk about domestic violence for a minute, and I'm only going to bring you one fact, but listen up hard, because this was quoted from a lecture last week given by the Fairfax County Police, that in the last year there were some 2,500 calls for domestic violence in Fairfax County, and over 1,700 of them occurred right here on the Route 1 corridor in Alexandria. What happens after the wedding? Jesus understood that making a commitment transformed very ordinary substances into extraordinary substances. The best wine was saved for last. Think about that for a minute, Wesley Church. The best wine saved for last. The longer the commitment, many of you know this, the more Christ is made real. And here's the thing. What the Gospel John wants us to see is that whenever Jesus comes into a person's life, just as the water turned into wine, we gain a new quality of life with Jesus. Listen up. Whenever Jesus comes into a person's life, just as the water is turned into wine, we gain a new quality of life with Jesus. Commitment does not make life dull and stale, but commitment to Jesus makes life full and interesting. Now, weddings are still the place where two lives become one, where two families are joined together in relationship, where the most ordinary of people become extraordinary in the other's eyes. I think this level of commitment ought to apply to many relationships. Relationships within family members. Possibly a relationship with a colleague or an employer or a neighbor. How about the commitment that it takes to mentor a child? And you just heard the statistics about what children need today, right? How about the commitment that it would take to mentor a newly married couple? Think about that. What kind of impact could that have? What flows naturally out of our commitment to Christ is commitment to others. You know, as we have become more global, we have lost some of what it means to live and dwell in the same village for our whole lives. Our community, which was once defined by our geographical location, now has different boundaries and borders, which has loosened the effect of commitment on our relationships, right? How many have experienced that? How many have experienced less commitment among neighbors that are there for less than a couple years at a time compared to their neighbors that have been there for 40 years? It's just a natural outgrowth of knowing people for long periods of time. There are more people in our neighborhoods to choose from. Many people are new, moving into communities like ours. And what does this text have to say about community relationships? Is Christ available in an abundance like the 180 gallons of wine at Cana? I mean, imagine that. Is Christ available in an abundance, available to offer new relationship? There are two things I want to say here, and the first I'm not going to spend too much time on. I think we can't ignore the fact that healthy relationships begin with trust and commitment, right? I mean, that's a no-brainer. A healthy relationship is one that has trust and has commitment together. If we were to use the Ten Commandments as the basis for our relationships, not as laws to live by and rules that we had to abide by, but as a promise from God, think of what that could do for us. Understanding that when our love for God comes first, all the other commandments become a promise. When you love God first, then we will honor our mother and father. When we love God first, we will not commit adultery. When we love God first, we will not covet our neighbor's stuff, right? See how that works? So when we keep God first, when we follow that first commandment, all the other commandments are promise. God makes that happen for us. It's not what we do. It's about our commitment to God, which brings trust and commitment in our relationships. Okay, now the second thing that I want to share, and this is a little more pragmatic and something that I am going to spend a little more time with, but this gets down to the nitty-gritty of healthy relationships, the day-to-day reality of what it means to grow in love with others, means that if we're going to grow in love with others, we need to learn how to express our love in different ways, right? Every person has a particularity in the way in which they come to know love. Gary Chapman wrote a worthwhile book titled The Five Love Languages. Who knows that book? Five Love Languages. It's a very good book. He describes the five ways that people understand love. First of all, people understand love through quality time. Quality time. It takes planning and it takes preparation to spend time with the one that you love. And it's a way to convey and communicate those that you love them. So it's about making a commitment to spending quality time with one another. And some people thrive on that love language. The second love language is acts of service. Doing an act of service for someone means that you care enough to know what the other person needs and you do it. Just a simple act of service. It doesn't have to be big, just the day-to-day, ordinary things. But you know that doing that one thing will make a difference in their lives. The third is physical affection. Physical affection is kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? Of course we feel love when someone hugs us or kisses us. I have to tell you that from my time as a nurse in labor and delivery, and this we should think about every day, okay? A newborn baby needs to hear its mother's heartbeat or its father's heartbeat and needs to smell their skin and needs to hear their breath in order to grow and develop properly. They have higher IQs. They have higher developmental curves. Kids that are held close, skin-to-skin contact with their parents grow better. Physical affection is an important aspect of growing in relationship and trust and commitment and understanding. It is a love language. The fourth love language is receiving gifts. Receiving gifts means that you want to bring enjoyment to someone. You enjoy giving that the person that you love something to enjoy, right? We all know what it feels like when you get that perfect gift from someone. You know that they love you. And the fifth love language is called words of affirmation. And I think that probably every marriage could use more words of affirmation. Try and for the next week, those of you who have close relationships, try to think about five times a day telling that person something that you appreciate. Five times a day, affirm the person who you love. Just try it and see what happens. This is not rocket science. Loving relationships grow out of the ordinary things that matter each and every day. Lasting commitment turns the ordinary into the extraordinary. I'll tell you a short little story. For 14 years, I drove our kids back and forth from school every single day. They were pupil placed outside of our school zone because that's where the after-school program was. And so while I was working, they were at the after-school program. And as you know, our children are required by law to sit in the back seat up to like the age of 10 or 11, right? And you know, is it still 10 or 11? Yeah. So for years, our son Daniel, our fourth child, would get in the back seat of the car and he would just reach over and he would place his hand on my shoulder right here. Just put his hand right there. It was his way to connect with me before buckling into his seatbelt. Now today, when Dan puts his hand on my shoulder just that way, it brings tears to my eyes. I recall that very simple gesture of love that he began years ago. It's become an extraordinary part of our relationship. This simple gesture, water turned into wine. And I'm going to close with these last thoughts on marriage. Finding the person you love and want to grow with for the rest of your life is a gift of God. It is a time of self-discovery as well as shared discovery. And it is a choice to enter into marriage. That same choice to love another has to be made every single day of your life, even when marriage is dull and stale. Marriage is simply a commitment to choose love always. And yes, we fall down a lot. The ordinary is just the ordinary much of the time. But when we keep our focus on the love of God, extraordinary things occur. And marriage becomes more than the sum of its parts. Marriage becomes a call to love beyond the existence of two individual people. Marriage has the potential to widen that circle of love, offering an abundance far more than any two people could offer together. Marriage becomes service and gift and compassion and devotion to others. It spreads out. Jesus performed his first miracle at a wedding. The wine foreshadowed the shedding of his blood that we might be transformed in love, through love and by love. Thanks be to God. Amen.